I was living in a devil town. Didn't know it was a devil town. Oh Lord, it really brings me down.
Welcome to the 2016 edition of the Devil's Junkie Podcast. I'm Ralph Amsden. I'm here with Chili and Brett Quintine. And why not just get straight into it? Chili, how you been? How's your year going so far?
It's going good. I'm a student teaching right now at a school in Mesa. I'm not going to disclose any more information than that. But I'm having a blast. And I'm just trying to keep my grades up. I'm just trying to, you know, hang out with these student bodies, you know, at ASU. And just trying to enjoy everything, you know, my last year. So just trying to hang out.
Brett, how you doing?
Doing alrighty. Things are well. No complaints. Just day by day. Good to reconvene with you guys.
Yeah, it's nice. It's real nice. And speaking of nice, Arizona State has the LA schools at home. It's some nice weather. If you can get out to a game at Sun Devil Stadium this weekend, they're 3-8 in conference right now. 13-11 overall. They've been in a lot of these games. One thing that I'm noticing from watching this team is by about halftime, you figure they're going to pack it in because they don't shoot well.
No.
And they don't really have the height to compete on the boards. It feels like they're scrappy, but they haven't earned respect yet, so they get called for a lot of fouls. Yet in the second half, they come storming back, and they don't usually always find a way to get over the hump, but they're in these games. And so I kind of wanted to open it up for you guys. Is 13-11, 3-8 in conference, one spot out of last place in the Pac-12, is that something you expected in Bobby Hurley's first year with this roster, or is that something that disappoints you?
I'll say I didn't expect it. I expected a better record from a fan standpoint. I'm a bit disappointed, but all factors considered, his first year, he's still working with Herb Sendek's roster. He is in a conference where it's not the University of Buffalo. Night in, night out, there's deep travel. He's got new personnel to work with between coaches and players. More so than the 13-11 record, it's the 3-8 that kind of concerns me because, as you mentioned, it is the bottom of the Pac-12. But it's the first year, and I think he gets a pass, as I think all coaches should in their first year at the D1 level.
Are they in a better place with Sendek?
No, definitely not. This is the best situation for them to have Hurley in here, to have Sendek out. Hurley has the unenviable task of taking over Sendek's players. There's some talent there, but just not enough talent to get them over this hump. Hurley is doing an amazing job of keeping his players competitive, and you can see the Hurley grit in this team, but you know, there's just not a lot he can do. But next year, they're going to be dynamite.
So next year, I mean, they're bringing in, the roster's almost going to turn completely over with the three JUCO guys that he brought in. They're going to be seniors. He's going to have Shannon Evans from Buffalo. We're going to have another player from Buffalo. You're going to be bringing in some recruits. You might even have one of the top players in the country, Thon Maker, coming in to play some basketball. This team could look completely different. Some of the guys that are getting 25 to 30 minutes a night this year, Obi Aleka, who I love, you know, he could be looking at a situation where he's 13 to 18 strong minutes off the bench next
That's
year.
Right.
So 3-8 in conference. Let's say they split this weekend. 4-9 in conference, 14-12 overall. Let's jump ahead 365 days with turnover in the roster, with time under Bobby Hurley. What do you think they're looking at a year from now, heading into Pac-12 conference tournament time? You think that they'll be up at least in the top six?
Yes.
This is a 20-win team next year.
I was going to say, at this point next year, let's say after 26 games, they should be knocking on the door of 20 wins at this point with a handful of games left. So, yes, this is a 20-win season.
This is a 20-win team next year, no question. They got the kid from Hurley's dad's school, right?
St. Anthony's?
Yeah, they do.
The Australian kid, right?
Yeah.
This is a 20-win team next year.
And that's the start of the pipeline.
The Hurley hype is so real. And this is just the appetizer. Wet your beak a little bit on what Hurley's got going on. I am so jazzed and excited. And you know what? Wells Fargo is rocking. Even though this team is, you know, floating around 500, losing a lot of games in a row, this team is has Wells Fargo just rocking with the 942 crew, everything that they're doing. Curtain of distraction, Michael Phelps.
And that was the game that I was there. Yeah, I've been to just one game so far this season.
Yeah, Brett Quintana trying to wear the medals.
No,
you know?
I'll wear a medal, but I'm not doing that Speedo thing. But to see the curtain of distraction and to see that energy at Wells Fargo was fun. It was a game in which they beat up Oregon State pretty good. So to see them essentially at their peak shows what he is capable of and what the whole basketball program is capable of in the future.
And I know we're going to get into football a little bit later, but football was hovering around 500 trending down. Now basketball is hovering around 500 trending up, and it's a huge difference, and you can see it in the stands.
And you'll see it in the stands. Like you brought up, you know, Daniel Mading's going to be coming in from St. Anthony's. I think he's Thonmaker's cousin. You have Andre Adams, who's 6'9", coming off a ACL tear. He's getting healed up. He'll be able to come in and add some height. Besides depth, which is this team's biggest problem far, with Mauricio Fields suspended, you know, they've got 8 scholarship players they're parading out there every day. But outside of depth, this isn't a very tall team either.
No. And that's part of why they're getting, I'm going to say, manhandled. They don't shoot terribly well. They're overmatched to start a lot of their conference games. And it doesn't even matter in conference, out of conference. They're overmatched in many ways, and that's why we're seeing the record that they have.
All right, then. Well, let's move on to ASU football. We haven't gotten together, at least in the sense to talk and on air, to do the podcast or anything like that. We haven't talked since prior to the bowl game when they were 6-6, hoping to go 7-6, hoping to get Chip Lindsey's offensive system plugged in, wondering if they were going to lose any coaches to Mike Norvell. Well, they end up losing that bowl game. They give up more passing yards to West Virginia's quarterback than he's ever thrown for by far. ASU ends up dead last in the entire country in passing defense. Dead last. And that includes playing 2 games against triple option teams who don't even throw the ball. So, I mean, you imagine you get a couple of competent passing teams, you know, in place of the Cal Poly and the New Mexico game. And you're talking about having maybe an all-time bad year with 3 seniors in the defensive backfield for the majority of the season. That is highly concerning. And following on the heels of that game, you have Mike Norvell out at Memphis, and he hires away quite a bit of ASU staff. Chris Ball, defensive backs coach, he's now the defensive coordinator out there. We lost an assistant strength coach. We managed to keep Chris Thompson on the offensive line. Managed to keep Josh Martin and promote him to coach tight ends.
That's big.
I'm a big Josh Martin fan, but you look at it, you see, you know, Norvell takes a few people, and then we lose a defensive line coach, Jackie Shipp, to Missouri, where he's getting a 33% pay increase to go coach in the SEC.
Can't be mad at that.
Yeah, exactly. But what I want to ask you is, you know, if this isn't a 6-7 team, If this is a 10-3 team like they were the year before, this is a 10-3 team. Does Todd Graham lose all of these staff members to promotions to Memphis? Even if Mike Norvell goes, you know, does he lose guys like Ball to Memphis? Does the staff then become depleted?
Not as much. I mean, I just want to flip back to something we said in mid-December. 6-6 team, we're talking about the Sun Devils lighting up West Virginia, and we kind of joked around, hey, what if Bercovici has a great game, which we kind of did, but in a loss. And that, unfortunately, that's what happened, actually. So the season really came to a crashing end, and I think that's why you saw the mass exodus. Yeah, if this was a 10-3 team or coming off that solid bowl win, whereas Chili would say a team that's trending up, I don't think we see that mass exodus. But the way the season ended, I think guys were looking to, I don't want to say looking to get out, but exploring all options, and that's why you have a depleted staff.
Well, Chris Ball took a Big Sky interview for a head coaching position before moving out to become a defensive coordinator, and defensive backs coach to defensive coordinator is definitely a promotion. Chip Long, who was their recruiting coordinator, tight ends coach, you know, he was making $150,000 a year. He goes from making $150,000 a year and being a recruiting coordinator to being an offensive coordinator for a very promising Memphis team. So that's a big promotion.
Absolutely.
So, Chili, do you think that these are jobs that these guys take if the season ends up turning out differently?
So I think that Jackie Shipp and the guy that went to Missouri and obviously Norvell, they took the big ones. They did the most with what was available to them. And, you know, I'm not mad at them for leaving. I think that there was probably going to be – I feel like some of these guys probably left because they felt like Todd Graham's losing the situation a little bit. The situation isn't what it was. Let me find something else before this becomes Titanic. I think these coaches are gonna have some second thoughts later on when they see how this recruiting class progresses over the next few years. This recruiting class is dynamite, and I think some of these coaches abandoned ship too early, and it's gonna be a painful reality in about 2 years.
Now, Todd Graham said, you know, we lost some good coaches, but we gained some great ones. And if you remember, before last year, Les Miles took some heat for the way that he talked about Chavis's departure to Texas A&M. Now, for all intents and purposes, I mean, Todd Graham seems to be on at least decent terms with a lot of the coaches that have left. Mike Norvell's good friend, executor of his will, and everything like that. But, you know, that quote taken out of context, is that overconfidence? Is that just showing confidence in your ability to hire and bring guys in? Or do you think in some way, shape, or form that could be taken as a slight by the old staff?
You know, I don't know that I fully believe everything that's said. I got to see it first. I don't know that I think that Chip Lindsey is the answer right now. I think Chip Lindsey is going to get a very gifted quarterback in Bryce Perkins. He's going to get a very gifted wide receiver in N'Keal Harry. And that doesn't even talk about the returners yet, the returners that played last season. You know, I'm not buying it yet. I got to see.
So Chip Lindsey, he gets here. He helps call some plays in that bowl game. The offense looked good, at least. We can say that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They got a lot of opportunities on the field. I mean, our defense was getting torched, so...
And then our old buddy Dirk Cutter gets the head coaching job in Tampa Bay. And the first thing he does is he takes Southern Miss's head coach and makes him the offensive coordinator. Well, a natural fit for the head coach at Southern Miss would have been probably Chip Lindsey,
right,
who had one of the best offenses in the country the previous year. 4,000-yard passer, 2 1,000-yard rushers.
And that's impressive. Yeah. 2 1,000-yard rushers is big.
And Chip Lindsey decides to stay at ASU, gets a $100,000 raise without... you know, having really been plugged into his position yet. Do you think that that's at least something ASU can look at as a win, at least retaining the coach? I mean, it would have been bad, right, if they lose their offensive coordinator
before
just
even
a month
did
after hiring him?
Yeah, it would have been a bad situation, and I'd say it's a small victory. It definitely is, but in the grand scheme of things, I think they just have to really look at everything in front of them. I mean, coaches are going to move, and they do some, when I say coaches in general, all D1 coaches, they take certain positions for unknown reasons, because you have different conferences, you have different positions, different organizations. Yeah, but I'd consider it a small win in the grand scheme of things.
I'm just not sold on Chip. There were some other guys that I wanted to see come in. We've talked about this before. You know, I wanted to see Bryles get an opportunity.
No, that would have been awesome.
See the guy from Duke get an opportunity. You know, there's just a couple other coordinators around the country that, like, I liked just a little bit more, you know, just a chip more, I guess.
Well, you know, Chip Lindsey is a guy that has, you can probably say this with some confidence, he's turned down 3 head coaching positions to be Arizona State's offensive coordinator. So... he must see something in what he's going to be taking over, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But let's first get to the miracle that ASU was able to pull off on signing day, and then let's get to some of the disappointments that came along with, if you were following along on DevilsDigest.com along with Arizona State's signing day as well. Arizona State went into mid-December with 18 signees. And when the dust settled on signing day on February 3rd, 2016, they had those same 18 signees. And now you're talking about with all the coaches that they lost.
Yes.
With all the coaches that they lost, they managed to hang on to everybody. And now everybody, to be fair, is 10 guys because they had an unprecedented 8 guys on campus already.
Uh-huh.
Already signed, already in class and everything like that. So you had 10 guys. Chiefly most important would probably be the local kids, N'Keal Harry, Chase Lucas. They managed to hang on to them. Word is that Washington and Oregon State made a late play for Chase Lucas. Everybody wanted N'Keal. There was some worry that Ohio State would come in there at the end. But ASU manages to hold on to their quarterback, Dylan Sterling Cole. They managed to hold on to the running back, Trey Turner. They managed to hold on to everybody. And they get everybody signed on signing day, and we'll see if there's any issues when it comes to qualifying later on down the road. But with that much staff turnover, should have ASU at least seen a couple of players flip? And what does it say about the program that they didn't?
I'd say ASU is, and it was definitely a theme from the tail end of last year, pretty much led by Chase Lucas. This is a hot place right now, no pun intended with the weather. The Sun Devils have something going on with the new style uniforms, just with the whole, I'm going to say, swag with N'Keal Harry. Kids want to come here. Tempe has always been a very desirable place. I think Todd Graham still has a great name, regardless of the record that they had last year. You can see, if you're 16, 17, 18 years old, you want to come to Tempe, whether you live in California or New York City. So by them holding on to all those recruits, it says a lot about what's going on with the Sun Devils football program.
You know, I talked to Chase and N'Keal a couple of times, and, you know, this recruiting class is going to be special. This whole hashtag New Devils Order thing that they got going on, I think Chase is going to bring a different type of swag. He's going to be the leader of the band. He's going to be the star. And, you know, I told a bunch of people, I see him playing safety, and people tried to say that, you know, it'd be a tough transition for him because he needs the ball in his hands. Chase is going to show everybody that he's an all-around football player, and I expect him to do some Adoree Jackson type things.
Now, I will say, and for whatever reason, I seem to be the pessimist in the whole program, which,
man,
I think it's fine. And no, and I'm even going to say more realistic.
I remember the beginning of the year, you took heat for saying you didn't think this defense looked very good, and look what happened.
And that's, thank you. Well, that's number 25, according to ESPN, from a ranked class. Respectable, kind of. I mean, for all that we see in this class, and I think there is some good in it, a lot of good actually, there are 24 programs supposedly that had a better recruiting class. Now, what that translates into in 2, 3, 4 years down the road, I don't know. But at the same time, number 25 spells to me a little bit better than average. And I know that may sound real, okay, he doesn't know what he's talking about or saying or whatever, but it's not like they had a top 10 recruiting class or even a top 20. Are there some great athletes in there? Yes. And are we pulling for them? Of course. But I don't know if 25 spells out Pac-12 title. I don't.
Well, and I mean, you got to look at what this team's biggest weakness obviously was. They needed some help in the defensive backfield. They needed some help on the offensive line. I think they took care of the offensive line with a couple of JUCO guys that they brought in, Tyson Rising, A.J. McCollum. A.J. Mm-hmm. McCollum has the opportunity to step in and be Nick Kelly from the get.
Yes.
Tyson Rising is a big guy that can play guard or tackle. Marshall Nathie's a good player. You know, Cole Cabral, the kid they got out of California, might be the best lineman of the whole class. They took care of that. But you look at the defensive backfield, and they made a play for Byron Murphy. They didn't get him. They made a play for Lamar Jackson, the number one safety in the country. They didn't get him. Came down to ASU in another school, didn't get him. They made a play for the hardest hitting safety in the land, Calvin Bundage. They didn't get him. They tried to flip a kid who was committed to U of A to play receiver. didn't get him. Tried to flip a defensive lineman who was committed to Missouri. Well, it doesn't help when your coach leaves and the news breaks right before signing day that he's headed to Missouri. So you have to figure that kid, Trey Williams, is probably going to stay at Missouri at that point. And I know that, you know, this is going to come down to, and there's this attitude when it comes to recruiting of we didn't want him anyway. Anytime somebody doesn't sign, we didn't want him anyway. Well, there's a guy, John Tate, that they were pursuing in earnest, and he chose Memphis before he ever had a chance to visit ASU. And, you know, you can say, oh, he was a backup plan. But when you don't sign anybody from mid-December all the way until February, there are no backup plans. Everybody's in play. So you technically lost out on a recruit to your old staff.
Right.
And to me, you know, there's an encouraging portion of this recruiting class, which is that they hung on to everybody. And there's a discouraging part, which is that when it came down to everybody they were trying to land at the end, they struck out. Why do you think that is?
I don't know that strikeout seems such like a negative term. I don't know that ASU is really striking out. They're missing out on some of these really good kids. But 3 or 4 years ago, they didn't even have a chance at these kids. The kid that ended up choosing Michigan, that decommitted from like Ohio State, like, when did that happen last? When was ASU even in that conversation? Keenan Walker, yeah. Like, and it's, this class is special for a variety of reasons. Let's not forget, it's carried by N'Keal Harry, the number one receiver in the country. The number one. I don't care who anybody, Mini Megatron, my man
Holly. No, you're Harry, right. You're absolutely right.
Is going to make a movie at ASU. Chase Lucas, these two local boys.
Are you
going to
direct the movie?
I might have to. I might get my producer credits, you know. This class is so special beyond the number 25 that it's almost unfathomable what this class is capable of. And, you know, I do know that Jamarcus Rhodes and Maurice Chandler and some of those guys, they were watching that West Virginia game just licking their chops. They can't wait to, you know, get an opportunity to get on that field because they know they're probably starting.
That's good. I look forward to that. I definitely do.
Everybody is.
Well,
after
absolutely.
This year.
Yes. No, that's very true.
We need new
Here's
faces.
The other thing, though, and it goes back to something we touched on with the whole redshirting. Kids want to play now. You don't want to have a lot of true freshmen on the football field. Basketball is one thing. Yes, right. You can have, we've seen the Fab Five and many versions of that with Kentucky. But Hashtag problematic organization, wow, or whatever we're going to call it. But on the gridiron, yeah, it's great when one or two stick out. You don't want to have a basis for a lot of true freshmen on either side of the ball on the football field.
That's fair. That's fair. So I will ask you, and there's a lot of great content on devilsdigest.com. If you haven't, check it out. Personally, I wrote a floor and ceiling article for every single commit that they got, what I think the ceiling is for each recruit, what I think the bottom is for each recruit, including N'Keal Harry. I see him somewhere between like a Robert Meacham and a Michael Floyd.
That was well written. Yeah, I mean, you broke it down on all of these guys.
So I got one for offense and defense, and we're also putting out some articles on who some of the locals you should look at for 2017 are. Lots of great content, devilsdigest.com. Give it a look. But who would you say the recruit that you're, I mean, and I'm going to limit you to not mentioning the local kids. Who would you say the recruit that you're most excited to see develop is? And what's the one that you regret ASU not getting?
I'll start off. There's two kids that intrigue me. Of course, Texas high school football is fantastic. So Dylan Sterling Cole. I'm interested in seeing how he's going to jump in because even without him, you got a lot of quarterbacks in the mix, a lot of talented quarterbacks. Now you put him in there, and it becomes a dogfight. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing who emerges at that QB battle. I think Dylan Sterling Cole has a lot of upside, or as you mentioned, a ceiling. Also, and I've never been a flashy type of guy, Jared Bubeck, the tight ends. He is, I'm not going to say he's necessarily key, but that position is key. We see what Cody Cole can do. He's not an all-world prospect, but he's effective in the offense. And you need an effective tight end consistently, so I'd like to see him develop and contribute. And, of course, the one guy that I wish they would have gotten, of course, was Byron Murphy.
Okay.
You know, I'm definitely on board with Dylan Sterling Cole. I can't wait to see him hold this clipboard and, you know, get in when they engineer some blowouts, when Bryce Perkins does his thing. And I think that Dylan Sterling Cole is going to take the torch, you know, from Bryce. I think that's going to be exciting for a lot of Sun Devil fans to kind of watch those two quarterbacks grow up together. Another quarterback that I'm shocked at, I know you wanted to limit us on, like, local kids, but the Jack Smith situation is absolutely crazy. Like, I don't know that situation.
Well, we'll get into that.
Stealing a scholarship, so we'll get to that later. And the one that I miss, man, I like that kid, the Ohio State kid that decommitted and then chose Michigan.
Kareem Walker.
Kareem Walker. I really feel like we had a chance. I know a lot within our ASU circle think that I was like pipe dreaming and, like, you know, just not believing reality. But I had some conversations with people and I really thought that we had a good shot. And I thought that that was something that was going to, you know, shock the football world. If we could have got him, you know, I'm also on board with the Byron Murphy thing. That's a good kid, a good local kid. And, you know, we missed out and for whatever reason, but it's not done. He could always transfer back. So,
and we have seen a lot of Arizona kids when they go elsewhere end up transferring, and so we'll have to keep an eye on.
Well, let's all go see him in Seattle on November 19th.
I'm about that life.
Good.
So, probably uniquely to this podcast and this group of people, we have seen Jack Smith play quite a bit, and after signing day. It comes in that after ASU struck out on quite a bit of people, you know, they had 22, 23 scholarships that they could give out. They ended up with 18. There's a thought that hopefully you end up with a late Tim White situation or a late Devin Lucian situation. You can't bank on those. So they would have probably used all those rides if they got the right players in place. But then they end up with a 19th signee, and it was former UNLV quarterback commit, former NAU quarterback commit, son of ASU baseball coach Tracy Smith, Jack Smith, who will be playing safety. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with Jack Smith, he came from Indiana as a senior, I believe enrolled in Desert Vista, and ended up at Mountain Point instead, led them to a 12-0 start before they lost in the Division I semifinals. Yes. And he, if there's one thing about him that sticks out, well, he's definitely an intelligent player, but he's fast. And when you have somebody who's fast, and speed's not really something that you can teach, at least not at this age, you figure, you know, somebody's only going to be able to shave a little bit of time off. You know, if they run a 4.8, it's probably not going to turn into a 4.4. But Jack Smith is fast, and they think they can convert him to a safety. Now, the message boards kind of went wild a little bit.
Yeah, they did.
About this being maybe a little bit of nepotism or a scholarship they shouldn't have given away. Now, let's talk about nepotism real quick, because there is no football without it. There is no football without it. Denver Broncos just won the Super Bowl with Gary Kubiak at head coach. They were doing fine. With John Fox, and they end up with Gary Kubiak at coach because John Elway's more comfortable with him, and he used to be in Denver. And Brock Osweiler's the backup quarterback because he was Jack Elway's roommate, and that gave John Elway a chance to see him. Nepotism is everywhere in football.
Definitely.
You almost can't have football without it. So I want to say that element of it shouldn't necessarily shock anyone. But I do want to get your feelings on Jack Smith getting a scholarship from ASU late in the game.
I think he got it fair and square. I mean, having seen him play, I was impressed. Granted, I saw him obviously a lot more as quarterback than safety, so that position switch, whether it's a Chase Lucas, who primarily played offense for the Chandler Wolves, or a Jack Smith, that's always going to be, I'm going to say, a question mark until proven on the field. But as far as Jack Smith deserving a scholarship, I have no issue with that. He was a quality Division I high school player. He got offers, as we said, from UNLV and NAU. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
You know, the kid got offers from UNLV and NAU. He also got offers from Eastern Washington and Eastern Michigan. I just don't think that he was better than a lot of other kids. Number one is Hamilton's Kyler Burke. And I know that this is a Sun Devil podcast, so I don't want to get too far into the high school situation, but Kyler Burke is one of the top 25 football players in the state. And he plays defensive back. Now we're picking up a quarterback. We're going to switch him to safety. He's probably not going to see the field. Although, conveniently put at safety, if he doesn't see the field, then I know that it's a sham. Because this secondary was so bad last year that the three of us could probably start next year. So, if Jack Smith doesn't see the field in his time generously, then I call it a sham. He got a gift. You should be grateful for it. Run your gassers. Do your up downs and be happy.
And I'm cool with gifts. I mean, it's what I've liked to have seen Kyler Burke get a scholarship. Of course, absolutely, because as you just said, we've seen him play extensively. But I think it's all part of it. I mean, if you are fortunate to be in certain situations, I take no issue with that, and Jack Smith is a Sun Devil.
And there's some sensitivity there. Obviously, Kyler Burke was kind of guided by ASU a little bit to play some defensive back. He was a pretty accomplished wide receiver, uh-huh, playing the Kerry Taylor, Kendall Taylor position out at Hamilton. Had success running the ball, had success catching the ball out of the backfield and running routes. He switches over to defense. I think he had quite a few interceptions. Uh-huh. A lot of them were kind of right place, right time. But at the same time, he gets to the right place and makes it the right time.
He's a ball hog.
His dad played receiver at ASU, I think from like 89 to 91. Keith Burke, look it up. I think his mom was a cheerleader there. And so he wanted
legacy.
That. Yeah, he wanted that. He wanted to be a Sun Devil. And his other offers kind of got pulled out from under him. And the thing you get into with the whole Jack Smith issue is he didn't play safety. And his dad, obviously, ASU. But it's when you start talking about some of the other high school players. And you brought up Kyler Burke. John Akwali is one of the best athletes in the state. And, you know, he ended up at Wyoming because he had offers pulled. And recruiting is a...
What about Isaac Steele?
Isaac Steele walked on at U of A.
Walked on? Yeah. Like, this kid could have played.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And so when you get down to comparing one player to another, even when it comes to players who had a bunch of offers, and we bring up the whole nepotism thing, Connor Murphy had way more offers than his older brother Trent did, and Trent... You know, Trent plays in the NFL, so you can't really compare him to that. Is Connor Murphy going to go from USC to the NFL? I don't know. But Connor Murphy got double and triple teamed a lot as a junior, and he was hurt his whole senior year. He had a ton of offers. He had coaches vying for his attention. He had Jim Harbaugh sleeping at his house, you know.
That's so hilarious.
And, you know, there are other players in the state who saw that Connor Murphy, well, while he was hurt, you know, he didn't really produce a lot as a junior and a senior, and who felt like they deserved more of a look than he did. But guess what? You can't teach someone to be 6'7".
That's right. Size matters.
Yeah, exactly. Size matters. Well, and in Jack Smith's case, he's one of, and I've said this a few times, especially on the message boards, he was one of the five fastest kids in the state this year. Just so happened that he played quarterback, and he is athletic. This is a kid that can, uh-huh, 6'1", can, you know, windmill dunk it in Toms. You know, there's a video of him doing online. So, you know, but can he hit? Then you have the same questions about Chase Lucas, but obviously Chase Lucas was pursued by everyone in the country,
correct,
whereas Jack Smith was, can you know, pursued mostly by FCS schools. But you can make that jump from, you know, you can be a late bloomer, you can make that jump. Daniel Bridge Gadd was committed to New Mexico State. He ends up going to Washington, and he's a recruit they're really excited about. So you never know what happens, but like Chili said, unless this plays out in a certain way where he proves himself and you know, he's got some Jordan Simone comparisons.
Please prove me wrong.
Yeah.
Please. Like, I would love that. Right. I would love for people to be like, hey, Chili, we heard what you said about Jack Smith, and now this guy is, you know, an All-American.
No, that'd be
great.
Give
me my words and I'll eat them. But, like, my forecast is a lot of Jack Smith on the bench. And
well, and you never know. Norris Vaughn, head coach of Mountain Point. You
know, be on the sidelines more than white paint, just so you know. Like,
but Norris Vaughn, head coach of Mountain Point, he said that Jack Smith is this incredible athlete, an athlete like he's never had. But here's the deal.
Oh, yeah? What about
last year, Norris Vaughn also said that Garvin Alston, his quarterback then, was a Division I quarterback. And, you know, he actually plays baseball for Tracy Smith. So, you know,
gotta love Norris Vaughn. That's, Norris Vaughn is.
Coaches are going to go to bat for whoever they have.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right? Bud Kilmer. I'm just saying. Varsity Blues over there.
Well, let's get into what's coming up. We're gonna have spring football. Believe it or not, we're getting close to that time. We all started and made the jump to Rivals at the end of February. Started.
Yeah,
so it's been almost a year. This spring is going to be huge. You're gonna have battles on the offensive line, on the defensive line. The way I look at it, there's really only six or seven seniors outside of the kicker and punter.
Three open spots in the secondary.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of open spots in the secondary last season. So, I mean.
No matter who was on the field,
just three this season.
Yeah. Four people in the secondary, five open spots.
Right.
But at the same time, you're going to have people coming in and competing to play all over the field. Let's obviously get right to the meat of it, the most important position on the field, quarterback. And I'm going to give you a name, and you have to tell me what percentage, and I know from a couple of you, but you have to give me what percentage you think they have to win the job, what it would take for them to win the job, and what it would take for them to lose the job. So let's start out with the incumbent, the guy who actually took a couple of snaps last year, didn't really throw the ball, but he's been on campus for a couple of years now. He's been ASU's best recruiter, Manny Wilkins. What percentage would you give him to win the job, and what can he do to win it, and what can he do to lose it?
Well, I'll say also with a new offensive coordinator, a lot of people are on a clean slate. That's the one thing. This is essentially everybody starting from the starting line. No one really, I think, has a leg up. Manny Wilkins, I think I'm going to say maybe a 25% shot. I think he's got some work to do. I don't think he's as physically polished or as gifted as Bryce Perkins, but I think Manny Wilkins, the fact that he has been there a year longer, has seen very minimal game snaps, but game snaps nonetheless, I think that helps him a little bit, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't think he'll be the starter.
What does he have to do to win it? What would he have to show you?
He has to dominate. He has to have just some incredible arm strength. He has to just prove that he can run out of the pocket as well. I mean, I think he really has to be a showstopper in spring practice.
Chili, Manny Wilkins, percent, and what can he do to win the job?
Man, 25, that's a lot. I'm gonna say probably somewhere closer to, I want to say 10. I'm thinking 10. To win the job, to win this quarterback job from Bryce Perkins, I don't know. He ain't taking Bryce Perkins' lunch. He ain't. I don't see it happening. It's unfortunate. Manny Wilkins can hold a clipboard, and I don't see him taking the job. Injury is the only way that he wins that job.
Wow. All right. So Brady White, Brett.
I think Brady White, for whatever reason, becomes that odd man out. I don't see him getting a lot of time. He, granted, was in for spring last year, as opposed to Bryce Perkins, but I don't see him really emerging. I think he's, I don't want to say he's the least talented of the three, because, I mean, he definitely comes with some solid credentials, but I'm going to say he's more around that 10% chance of starting. I think he would really, I think an injury of some type to some of the other candidates would have to occur for Brady White to be the starter next year. And I think he's just going to have to be really impressive of wow. But the one thing, and I'll revert back to the whole offensive coordinator, all of the work that all the quarterbacks did last year, I'm not going to say was unseen, but when you have a new guy running the offense, of course Todd Graham was there, but when you have a new guy running the offense, everybody's on that clean slate.
Well, it's not like it's going to be his first spring either, like you said. It's going to be his second spring. Chili, what do you think of Brady White?
Actually, you know, I kind of like White. I really differ on my opinion from Brett's. I give Brady White a little bit more of a chance. I'm going to put him up at 11%.
That is a little
okay,
bit.
That is a little bit.
I'm going to give him a little bit more of a chance than Manny, than Wilkins. So, you know, I just don't, you know, his only opportunity to start, to win the starting job, it's also injury. It's catastrophe, tragedy. You know, I think that the one thing I will say is Chip Lindsey is blessed with three young guys at quarterback. So, you know, sometimes, you know, you can say that a coach wants to recruit his guy, but, like, you almost don't have to. These three are young, and they're a little bit different.
You know, I was going to say, that's the big thing, yes.
They're a little bit different from each other. So, like, he kind of has a really good – Mike Norvell did leave him with a cupboard that is not bare. And it's very far from Chip Lindsey walked into a really good situation. That's why. That's why he didn't take them other jobs.
Especially
he knows.
A running back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has a wealth of talent at running back. So Brady White, and obviously, you know, it's tough when you look at a guy like Burko, who had a good year, but was a square peg in a round hole at times. Mm-hmm. Yes. You look at Brady White, and you kind of see a little bit of Burko, and it's tough. But again, this is a new offensive coordinator. It's a new system. Obviously, you know, both of you believe that Bryce Perkins has the best shot. What does he need to do to win the job, and what could he do to possibly lose it?
I think he just has to keep doing what he's doing. We've known him really since he was a sophomore in high school, and he's always been a student of the game. And I think that's what's really separating him from the rest of the pack, aside from his physical tools, that's bad. Physical tools.
I don't want to see those. That's what I don't want to see.
Yes,
on
no.
We're getting in-depth analysis.
Yeah, that's
that's too much analysis.
Mel Kiper does not go this far.
I think he just studies. He's smart. He really takes the whole football field, puts it in his head, and analyzes everything he does. I think that's what separates him. So I think as long as he continues to be the student of the game that he is, you mix that with his physical attributes, I think he'll be fine.
He's the boss. You know, he has the respect already.
Mm-hmm.
They know, and I'm not gonna throw names out there, but you know, I was in the MU. Two years ago, when Bryce was a senior in high school, I was in the MU after registering for classes, and I saw a certain ASU quarterback watching Bryce Perkins' highlight film. That can't be good. That's how you know that they already have the uh-oh mentality. Bryce Perkins is going to be the starting quarterback, even if he's injured. He's the guy, and ASU is going to go as far as they can ride Bryce Perkins.
Well, let's not say if he's injured, because I think they'll take some precautions. But, yeah, unless there's something ridiculously crazy, I don't foresee him not being the starter.
So I personally think they should take this contest into the NAU game. I think that all three quarterbacks, and we can talk about, you know, Dylan Sterling Cole. Obviously, if he was to come in and he was to win the job outright, that would throw everything into chaos. And that's probably something that can only happen if you have a little bit better job security, aren't coming off a 6-7 season.
That's right.
And he's coming in with crazy accolades, and you've made that promise beforehand. Right. But he is very talented, and I don't want to smooth that over. But, you know, I would like to see the job taken into the NAU game. One thing I do have to ask, because we've seen a lot of Bryce Perkins in person, is are we biased around this microphone right now because of the amount we've seen from him, his growth, his physical growth? I mean, he's much bigger than he was. He's accurate. He can run if he needs to, and he does study a lot. But we know those things because we're closer to the situation. Is it possible that we're missing something?
I'll say I'm probably a little bit biased. I mean, just having seen what he's done, but I'll say having seen what he's done in two uniforms, obviously the Channel Wolves, but seeing how he carries himself on the sidelines for the Sun Devils, having talked to him after a couple of practices, and him basically saying, hey, I'm watching what Mike Bercovici is doing. I want to be him next year. that has truly impressed me to say, you know what, Bryce is definitely still working and he still wants it.
I mean maybe I'm a little bit biased. I just, you know, Brady White, he was highly like touted coming out of high school. These kids are all, they're all good. Just, you know, one of them is just a little bit better than the others. And I don't know that at this point right now, if I think that bias around this microphone is necessarily the issue. I think that, you know, the hype is deserved. The hype is deserved. And Brady White's good. Manny Wilkins is good. And, you know, if one of them happens to transfer, they're going to be good somewhere else too. They're going to be the same good player they were some, you know, just somewhere else. I think that this quarterback position is getting very, very crowded.
It seems to be because there's not really a pecking order. I think one will be established by this time next year, but right now there is none. No, you're right.
And let's just get this out there right now. There will be transfers. Mm-hmm. This is not – Burko is the exception. He is not the rule. Mm-hmm. Whatever he did that made people feel all warm and good inside, you need to realize that's not going to be
that's not
what happens. No, correct. No. Nobody's learning anything from that. You know, Cam Newton just – played in the Super Bowl, and he played at Blaine College after Florida, and he played at Auburn.
Because he didn't want to be the backup.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers went to Butte Community College before he went to Cal. You know, quarterbacks moving around, as long as you do it right, I mean, you can ruin yourself. If you have professional aspirations as a quarterback, you put yourself in the wrong situation. I mean, that can be it for you. You know, you look at a situation like Connor transfer. Brewer. Flacco transfer. He was Michigan to what? Delaware?
Delaware.
And he has a Super Bowl ring. So,
And Connor transferred, made some very good business decisions for himself.
Virginia Law School. Yeah, he's going to be doing okay. But, I mean, quarterbacks positioning themselves, you know, they'll have success. Eli Manning holding out to not play in San Diego, and look at it, he's got two Super Bowls. And, you know, Mike Bercovici is a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
He is not what you should expect. So don't expect, if Bryce Perkins wins this job or Brady White wins this job, for everyone who's left over to say, all right, well, we're going to follow Mike Bercovici's lead, hang out for 4 years and get 2 degrees. You know, the quarterbacks that are on the roster right now for Arizona State, they want to play. Mm-hmm. They want to make something of themselves beyond college. And so, you know, you're probably looking at the best case scenario to even hold on to three of the quarterbacks that they have would be for Manny to play, and then someone to follow him, and then Dylan Sterling Cole to follow him. But at this table, that doesn't sound like that's what we think's even going to go down.
Correct.
We're going to get a lot more into this as spring practice goes. We'll be covering everything in depth. But let's touch on what your expectations are. Your top expectation, your bottom rung, your ceiling and your floor for 2017. What do you expect from this ASU team? Do you think they have a shot in the division at all? Do you think they have the opportunity to reach double-digit wins for the third time in Todd Graham's tenure here? Could they possibly have two straight years under 500? What do you think the high expectation is for them, and what the low expectation is for them?
I'm going to say my early prognosis, and obviously we're still many, many, many months away from kickoff. Not sure if they reach double digits, but I could see a 9-win season and a respectable bowl game. I don't consider this Chase Field Bowl, whatever that was, a respectable bowl. I mean, they were 6-6, and it was a throw-in bowl. It was on January 2nd. To me, that wasn't impressive. I could see them 9 wins, respectable bowl. On the low ends, if things don't break right, if they don't get the defense together, if, unfortunately, there's an injury of some type, and if our optimism doesn't pan out, could be looking at another 6-7 season.
I think that, you know, this team is going to be capable of winning double-digit games with a bowl game, of course, with the help of a bowl game. I see that being their 10th win. I don't think it's as guaranteed as the struggles that are about to come with a new quarterback, with somebody that hasn't taken college snaps yet. As much as I as much as I am a fan of Bryce Perkins and some of the youth that is on this team, it is youth in a very physical game. And I think that it is highly possible that we could be looking at a 7-win season. That's what I think.
And we don't have the schedule in front of us, but I'm going to say the key game, and it's either week 2 or week 3, when Texas Tech comes in. I don't know how good this Red Raiders team is this year, but traditionally, that's a school that puts up a lot of points.
Right. And
that is the ASU weakness as we know it for now. So I'm going to circle that game and say that's going to be very big on the calendar early on.
And not only do you have to worry about Texas Tech, but now you have to worry about Texas Tech's former quarterback, Davis Webb, who grad transferred to Colorado. Who tore ASU up for almost 500 yards, 4 touchdowns in the Holiday Bowl a couple years ago. So you have these teams that come out and test ASU deep, and it seems like time and time again they're failing those tests.
Well, Cliff Kingsbury, he likes to talk a lot and he likes to throw the ball a lot and stuff. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of these kids that signed with ASU hoping to play in the secondary, they're going to get their shot and they're going to get it early. And they're going to get it against, you know, a respectable program.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to put up or shut up.
It is.
For a lot of these kids.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right.
And it's not just, you know what, it's not just ASU that's going to have a new quarterback next year. I think Utah is going to have a new quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado is going to have a new quarterback. Cal's going to have a new quarterback. USC is going to have a new quarterback. Really, UCLA with Rosen is probably in the best situation. Oregon's going to have a new quarterback. Oregon State's going to have a new quarterback, and Stanford. So everybody's going to be trying to fill in a piece. And UCLA's got to be looking at this right now saying, well, at least we have some stability, even though about 12 of their players just declared for the draft.
Yes, so, Miles, right. Jack, and Posse. Yep.
Exactly. So, we will get more into this as spring progresses. Until then, this has been Ralph Amson for Brett Quintine and Chili. This is the Devil's Junkie Podcast.
I was living in a devil town. Didn't know it was a devil town. Oh Lord, it really brings me down about the devil town.